was taken from an angle that would feature his nose prominently. Durante was born in 1893 in New York's Lower East Side. He spent his early years playing piano, or rather thumping piano, on the Bowery. Durante couldn't read music, so he sang loudly to cover up that fact. By 1927, he was making it big in vaudeville with the team of Clayton Jackson and Durante. He moved on to the movies, and then, in 1933, took to the airwaves, where he remained as a star for many years on the Jimmy Durante Show.
Them NBC bosses said I gotta be glamorous. So I went to a plastic surgeon. I had it enlarged. I got a million of them.
Well, this thing calls for a scientific approach. Tell me, when you go to bed, do you lie with your nose over the covers or under the covers?
Victor, the nose is the covers. If I could plug in this schnoz, I'd have the biggest electric blanket in town. But, Victor, let's ignore me and my dilemmas. I may not be able to sleep, but if I could, here comes the girl I dream about. It's Peggy Lee. Greetings. Peggy, might I say that you're looking chic tonight?
Well, so are you, Jimmy. As a matter of fact, I don't know which one of you is prettier tonight, you or Victor.
Well, I got dimples.
Well, Victor may have dimples, but I got, I must have something.
He's got insomnia.
Ah, you poor thing. Jimmy, what you need is some fresh air and relaxation. I went out to the racetrack yesterday, and I feel terrific.
Say, that sounds like a good idea. Did you win any money?
Well, I was wearing a dress with a new look, so I only bet to win and play.
How come?
Oh, with a new-look dress, nothing ever shows.
Ah, you blonde bombshell, you.
Say, that's funny that you mentioned the racetrack, Peggy. Just this afternoon, I found a free pass to the clubhouse. See, Jimmy, we can go out and spend the whole afternoon in Santa Anita without spending a dime.
A tempting proposition.
Racing farms, get your racing farms here.
One side, my good man. We're not betting today.
That's right, buddy. Now let me have that free pass, Victor. And watch the way I impress this guy at the ticket window. Hello, my good man. Here's our pass.
What are you doing out here? I'm betting $2 on you in the next race.
Betting on me? Wait a minute. I'm not a horse.
Then why is that oat bag hanging down in front of your face?
That's not a note bag, and stop counting my teeth. I'll tell you how old I am.
Just a minute, Buster. This fellow happens to be a friend of mine. I've yet to see the day you can holler at my friend.
Don't tell him, Victor.
I've yet to see the day you can holler at my friend.
Pipe down or I'll brain you.
Well, this is the day.
It's great to have a front man, but my boy is too much front and not enough man. But come on, Victor, let's rub hoofs with the horsey set.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
What's this?
The Bluegrass Stable is auctioning off their entire stock. Now, the first horse is a 2-year-old named Free Pass. I'll start the bidding at $2,500. Who makes the next bid on Free Pass? We'll make it $28 on Free Pass.
Gosh, Jimmy, isn't this interesting?
We'll make it $28.
Yeah, and to think we got in on a free pass.
What did you say?
Free pass.
Sold to the man with the big nose.
Wait a minute.
All bids are final. That's $2,800 for the horse, $40 for trainer's fees, $60 for stable charges, and the horse has a $700 food bill.
$700 for food? Where does this horse eat? At the Macombo?
Don't be silly, Jimmy. They wouldn't let him in there without a necktie.
This is no time for joshing. How am I going to get back my $3,300?
Spread out, boys. It's Hot Breath Houlihan.
Attention, Eastern States, we just solved your heating problem. Miss Houlihan, I didn't know you were interested in the sport of kings.
Are you kidding? Why, the last time Seabiscuit ran in the Kentucky Derby, I was standing at the finish line.
What happened?
It was the first time the jockey came in ahead of the horse.
I think I know how that boy felt.
Turn off your motor, Pudgy. You're running out of gas.
Wait a minute, Hot Breath. Maybe you can help me get my money back on this horse I just bought. You seem to know a lot about horses.
Well, Natch, I'm from Texas. Whenever I go away from Texas, I feel like I've left a part of me there.
If you'll have it shipped out here, I'll be happy to pay the freight.
Listen, I got some information that's right out of the horse's mouth.
That sounds like an awful sloppy place to keep.
Victor.
Look, boy, the horse you just bought is entered in the next race. Now, for $500, I think I can fix it so he's got a chance to win.
Good. What's your plan?
I'll put a martini in his oats, a Manhattan in his hay, and a bucket of champagne in his water trough.
Will that make him win?
I don't know. But if he loses, he'll be the happiest horse on the track.
It's a deal, Hot Fred. Here's the $500.
Thanks. Free pass will be the last entry, number 10. So long, flute snoot.
So long.
And goodbye to you, lover lips.
It gets around.
One of the greatest, Jimmy Durante. 50 years of broadcasting history are passing before your very ears, and we'll pay a visit to the small house halfway up in the next block to hear from Vic and Sade when we return in a moment with more of Grandma's Old Radio.
KJZY 93.7.
President Franklin D. Roosevelt listened as often as he could to the happenings in the small house halfway up in the next block. At that vague address in some unnamed small town lived Vic and Sade. Here was radio humor at its best, achieving critical acclaim among the comedy serials of its day. The show concerned Vic Gook and his wife, Sade, their son, Rush, and visits from Uncle Fletcher, who lived in a variety of rooming houses. Uncle Fletcher, as you'll hear in today's episode, seemed to be living in a world of his own. He seemed to have a time lag in his conversations, as though he were out of sync with the rest of us. Perhaps he lived in and out of another dimension. The show was written by Paul Reimer, who had a great way with exposing the speech patterns, the thoughts and feelings of Middle America. Like many of the great programs, it couldn't be put into any narrow category like soap opera or comedy. It was just Vic and Sade. And we'd better hurry halfway up in the next block, or we're going to miss the evening activities.
Well, sir, the evening meal has been over only a little while as we enter the small house halfway up in the next block now. And here in the living room, we find Mr. and Mrs. Victor Gook, young Mr. Rush Gook, and Sade's amiable Uncle Fletcher. Uncle Fletcher has been a supper guest. He's speaking at the moment, and we hear him say,
"There's no hurry about this, Sadie. We can talk about it any time it's convenient for you."
"Right now is fine."
"Well, if you got something private to discuss, Uncle Fletcher, Stone Brews here and myself will gladly retire to the kitchen, leave you guys alone."
"Sure."
Not at all. Stay where you are. I got this little bit of stuff to tell Sadie, and then you people can play cards or pop popcorn or whatever's on the docket."
"I wouldn't mind a shot of popcorn after a while."
"Popcorn is delicious."
"Yeah.
I roomed with a fellow once in Belvedere that ate popcorn with a bushel. Halfway to get up in the middle of the night and pop popcorn. One under the name of Morton. Albert Morton. Whatever become of him, I never did know. Some will tell you he went to St. Paul, Minnesota and married a Cunningham. Others will tell you he went to Pawnee, Illinois and married a Montgomery. Six of one, half a dozen of the other." "Yes, sir, Albert Morton. He certainly liked popcorn."
"What was it you wanted to talk to me about, Uncle Fletcher?"
"Fine. No, you hear different stories about what become of Albert Morton. Take K.L. Slater, Joe Frickley, and Harry Greel there in Dixon. Well, all three of them swear up and down Albert Morton went to St. Paul, Minnesota, and married a Cunningham. T.V. Adams, Jim Wade, and Walter Updegraff claim just the opposite. Albert Morton went to Pawnee, Illinois, and married a Montgomery, they'll tell you. I don't know. Play a game of cards a bit?
All right.
Play a game of cards, Sadie? Rush?
Sure.
You said you had something to talk to me about.
Albert Morton?
No, when we were getting up from the supper table, you said...
Oh, sure. Well, hold up the card game a minute, Vic.
Okay.
My landlady, Mrs. Keller, Sadie.
Yes?
I might be butting into something that's none of my business, if I am say so. But I had this idea and didn't see whether there'd be any harm in mentioning it to you. If I'm out of order, speak up.
Well, what about Miss Keller?
Could she join your thimble club?
Why, I don't see why not.
If I've opened my mouth and put my foot in it, say the word.
Not at all.
She's never said anything about the thimble club. It's my notion.
I've been playing with the idea.
Why, sure. I'll invite her the very next time we meet in my house here.
Half-wit woman don't get it quite as easy, see? Been in town all this time and only knows about six people. Of course, she's got her married daughter she visits, and the ladies around the neighborhood come calling once in a while, but she's not in the swim of stuff like she was in Dixon, and it makes her peevish. Remember now, she's never mentioned any of this to me. Well, I just thought, here's my niece, Sadie, president of the Thimble Club, where ladies sit and sew and talk. Mrs. Cutter take to that like a duck takes to water.
Uncle Fletcher, I think that's just awful sweet of you.
Yes, it is. No, now, if I'm sticking my neck out, you just chop it off.
Sweet as it can be. The very next time the Thimble Club meets here, I'll make it a special point to see that Mrs. Keller is expressly invited.
Fine. Got an application blank handy, Rush?
Application blank?
I'll take it home and have Miss Keller fill it out.
We don't have application blank.
Fine. Name, age, weight, color, all that junk. As far as that goes, I can fill it out myself. Mrs. Keller's 56, weighs 165. Got an application blank in your pocket, Vic?
No, I haven't. I generally carry a few, but you've cut me short.
Nice of you to do this, Sadie.
Golly, no. You're the nice one.
Yes, I am.
I should have invited Miss Keller before.
That's right.
I don't know why I never thought of it.
She sits, Miss Keller does. She sews. She talks. Thimble Club's just what she needs. Joy's being in the swim. No, the idea hit me just the other night. Here I've got this niece of mine, Sadie. Sadie's boss of this thimble outfit. Why not put a bug in Sadie's ear?
Well, I'm glad you did.
You say you got an application blank in your pocket, Vic?
I'm afraid I left all my application blanks in my other pants.
Fine. Sadie, don't ever let on to her I put this bug in your ear.
Oh, I won't.
She'd skin me alive.
Yeah. Oh, no, I won't let on. And I want to say again, I think you're just awful sweet to talk to me about this.
Yes, I am. No, she's lonesome. Membership in the Thimble Club is just what the doctor ordered. Cards, Vic?
Got them all shuffled, ready to deal.
Cards, Rush?
Sure.
Sadie?
Well, you boys go ahead and play. I got this pile of socks to darn.
Uncle Fletcher, Mr. Dumfax was telling me you and him...
Oh, say, the application blank.
Application blank won't be necessary, Uncle Fletcher.
Mrs. Keller weighs 165. She's 56 years old, gray hair.
There's nothing to fill out to join the Thimble Club.
She'll be willing to fill it out.
Well,
fix him an application blank. You can draw one up in 2 minutes.
No.
Sure. Mrs. Keller is no better than anybody else. Just because you're my niece is no reason for showing her any special favors. Where's that application blank? I'll fill out the son of a gun.
Step to the bookcase and frame one, Oscar.
Okay.
Application blank. To come visit the Thimble Club.
Well, he insists on it, don't he?
Sure. No, my landlady can go through what everybody else has to go through. She's neither sugar nor salt. Won't hurt her to sign an application blank. I'll deal, Vic.
Okay.
18 apiece, huh?
Oh, 7 apiece. Are you in, Kettle Drum?
Leave me out this end. I'm fixing up an application blank.
Just us two, I guess.
Fine. Somebody suggest popping some popcorn after a while?
Well, you did.
Uh-huh. Popcorn hits the spot long about the middle of the evening.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block.
Vic and Sade still have a core of fans who write to each other about the show, play trivia games, and pore over the old scripts. It was one of radio's most beloved shows. We're going to try to find out who's on first with Abbott and Costello as we continue turning time around in just a moment on Grandma's Old Radio.
KJZY 93.7.
One of the zaniest of comedy teams was Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. They started in burlesque, moved into vaudeville, and then motion pictures in the late 30s. In 1939, Abbott and Costello went on the air with their verbal slapstick, their humor relying essentially on corn. Abbott was the tall, almost handsome member of the team, a straight man who was more than straight. He even seemed to be a bit mean to the short, pudgy Costello, who never seemed real. No one could be that stupid and survive to adulthood. Or could they? Though their humor was mostly sight gags and corny shtick, Abbott and Costello created one of the all-time classic comedy routines. Who's on first?
Hey, Abbott!
What do you want, Costello?
Look, Abbott, I understand that you're going to be the manager of the Lou Costello Jr. Youth Foundation baseball team.
Yes, we just organized the thing.
Oh, you did?
Sure.
Well, I'd like to play on the team myself. You know, I know something about baseball.
Well, that would be accomplished.
Well, I'd like to know some of the guys' names on the team, so when I meet them on the street or in the ballpark, I'll be able to say hello to them.
Why, surely I'll introduce you to the boys. But you know, strange as it may seem, they give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Nicknames, pet names, like Dizzy Dean.
Better Daffy?
Daffy Dean.
And I'm their French cousin.
French cousin?
Gouffet.
Gouffet, Gouffet. Well, now, let's see. We have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
What silly name? I say who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You know the fellow's name?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
Have you got a first baseman?
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Now tell me who's on first.
That's right.
I want to know what's the guy's name on first.
No, what's on second?
I'm
base?
Not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. Now, we're not
he's on third. How did I get on third base?
You have to mention his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I face playing third
base? No, who is playing first?
I'm not asking you who's on first.
Who is on third?
I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on third?
What is on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again.
I can't change their name.
You got a first baseman?
Absolutely.
When you pay him off every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it. Why not? The man's entitled to it.
Who is?
Yes.
So who gets it?
Sure he does. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Who's wife?
Yes.
Well, all I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
Listen, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
Third base.
Field.
Well, surely.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd
tell
you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
Stay out of the infield.
Don't let you know names out here.
I want to know what's the left fielder's
what
name.
What is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. Look, the left fielder's name.
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field. Players as well as I do.
Look, you got a pitcher on the team.
Wouldn't this be a fine team without a pitcher?
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you, man.
Then go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now, let's... Who is now?
Break your arm, you say. Who's on first?
I
want to know what's the pitcher's
what's
name.
What's on second?
I don't know. Third base. You got a catcher?
Charlie.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today, and tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. I don't even... Look, all we got is a couple of days on a team.
I can't help that.
A couple of
don't
days.
Don't get excited, though.
Who's your next
side? Take it easy.
You know, I'm a pretty good catcher myself.
Tell the dummy.
Now, I'll catch today myself.
All
I'm
right.
Catch.
Yes.
And tomorrow's pitching on a team.
Yes.
Now, tomorrow throws the ball, and the guy up bunts the ball.
Yes.
Now, when he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I'm going to throw the guy out of first base. So I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
If I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
Oh, so I throw the ball to naturally.
You do nothing of the kind. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
No, you didn't.
Did I throw the ball to naturally?
But you don't.
I throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's what I'm saying.
That way.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
You ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Well, say...
Same as you. I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now, whoever it is drops the ball so the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to be called. Why? I don't know. He's on third, and I don't give a darn.
What'd you say?
I said, I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
We have more comedy, drama, adventure, and soap opera yet to come as we go back through the pages of radio history. A complete program from the Inner Sanctum is next when we return in just a moment with more from Grandma's old radio.
Whistle down the line. I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that'll sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. Here she comes. Jim, you better get the rig. She's got a list of passengers that's pretty big, and they'll all want lifts to Brown's Hotel, 'cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell, all the way from Philadelphia on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
All aboard!
Let her rip, let her rip, Mr. Engineer. Gotta go far away from here. While the man at the fire shovels on the coal. Stick your head out the cab, watch the drivers roll. See the towns and the roads go whizzing by. Fare thee well, Laramie, Albuquerque High. Yes, sirree, here we are going all the way.
Boss will quit till we hit California, yeah.
It's pretty big, and they'll all want lifts to Brown's Hotel, 'cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell.
All the way from Philadelphia
on the Atchison, Topeka, and the San.